It's time again for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective. The Coaching Perspective with Master Certified Business Coach Doug DeFeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Glad to be with you here in studio today. Well, welcome to today's episode of The Coaching Perspective. I'm your host, Doug DeFeller. I'm a Master Certified Coach by the International Coach Federation, and I've been coaching business owners, senior executives, and their teams for 20 years, helping them to clarify their objectives and reach their goals. If you'd like to know more about my coaching services, just go to my website, thecoachingperspective.com. Well, our topic for today is a business coaching model. Let me give you a little background on why that's our topic today. I obtained my coaching certification from the International Coach Federation in 1995. And in today's program, I want to share with you how my practice has evolved into a successful six-figure business. I always hate it when people say that, but I don't know how else to put it. Into a successful six-figure business that allows me to do what I love, which is helping others to identify what they love to do and live a balanced life. To be honest, I hadn't planned on this topic for today, but this morning I attended an Orange County ICF chapter meeting. The purpose of the meeting was to review the latest survey of coaching that was done by the ICF, and to also inform new members and those contemplating membership what the advantages of membership are in the local chapter. Well, the president, Maggie Stern, did a great job conveying both of those. In fact, I was so impressed, I asked her to appear on a future show here to discuss both of these topics, and we're just kicking around some dates. But hopefully she's going to be on the air here soon with us and share that information. But okay, what happened is, and I didn't know she was going to do this, and I guess Maggie hadn't planned on it either, but she looked around the room, saw she had a lot of relatively new people, and so she decided to start the meeting by asking me to share what my coaching model looks like. Now, she asked me that probably not because I have the greatest model in the world for coaching, but because she knows I have no trouble talking in front of a group. So the result was a lot of questions, both then and after the meeting, on details that kind of surprised me, that people wanted to know how to go about setting up their coaching practice and how to successfully grow it. All of which kind of led me to the discovery that there may be some benefit to other coaches to hear what I do, how I do it, and why I do it. So that's what today's topic is all about. Now, here's the disclaimer. I'm not saying this is the best model in the world. I'm just saying this is the way I do it, and these are the reasons I do it, and it may or may not fit what you do. It may tell you, boy, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. I'll be sure not to ever do it the way Doug does it. Or maybe there's some bits and pieces you want to borrow and apply to your own coaching practice. So let me start out with just a short bit about my background, because that'll let you know why I do some of the things I do. As far as education, I'm a finance, computer science major. After getting out of college, I spent 5 years in large corporate America working for Union Oil Company, downtown LA, doing mergers and acquisition work. And then I left there to get some exposure to small companies and to some startup firms, and worked for a number of firms, was involved in a number of startups as the controller for those companies, some of which floundered along and made money, and some of which didn't. Eventually, I left there, and in 1970, I joined the Irvine Company as a division controller in their finance department. After a year, talked myself into project management, and then eventually worked into vice president of all residential development. This was not just something I fell into. This was, for me, sort of a lifetime dream. Even while I was in school, I had followed the Irvine Company and been fascinated by what they were doing as a master developer in Orange County. So the opportunity to go to work for them and then get out of finance, which to me always was a stepping stone, and get into the nuts and bolts of residential development was great. Time moves along. The Irvine Company sold. I decided it was time for me to move on, and I started my own company. And so for 18 years, I had my own residential building company. We built over 1,000 homes in the surrounding counties and some commercial office projects, and did about $50 million a year in sales. And so we had a fairly sizable, good company. We went up and down from 25 to 50-some people. And then along came the downturn in the economy, and I sold the company and looked around to say, what am I going to do next? Well, during the time that I had been running my building company, I belonged to an executive mastermind group, tech at the time. I was fascinated with it. It was a great help to me. So I looked around for similar or look-alike businesses, and I bought the first franchise for Renaissance Executive Forums and proceeded to put together mastermind groups in 1994. I very quickly identified that people came to the meeting with lots of good intentions, took notes, came back the next month, and still had nothing but good intentions, had got sidetracked with what was going on in the office, and hadn't made any changes. And I realized that if they didn't take the things we talked about and actually implement them, they were very quickly going to determine that there was no real value to belong to the group. So at that time, coaching was getting kicked off. I went back, got trained by CTI as a coach, and became a certified coach in 1995. So from 95 to 2012, I really had two businesses going, my executive peer groups that I put together, and then also my coaching practice. In some cases, I had clients that belonged to both, that belonged to an executive peer group and also retained me to do individual or corporate coaching for them. But most of the clients that I got at that time came one way or another through the people or the connections that I made through the peer groups. Well, by 2012, I sold the executive peer group business and decided I wanted to just focus solely on coaching. And at that time decided I kind of wanted to change the coaching model. Prior to selling the forums business, I would have in a typical month someplace around 60 coaching engagements, many of which or most of which were face-to-face, which involved a lot of car time, a lot of windshield time running back and forth from one end of Orange County to the other end. So I decided to change my practice and sort of evolve into a different type of coaching model. So that's sort of the background. Let's talk about what I do. First, you have to forgive me. This is kind of going to get blurted out. I didn't spend a lot of time sequencing it because I didn't know what, frankly, the right sequence would be. But let's talk a little bit about clients to begin with. The first thing that I think any coach has to address is, why would they pick you? I don't think anybody has ever, in fact, I know no one has ever hired me because I'm a master certified coach. The reason that they wanted to even talk to me as a coach or think of using me over another coach was because of my business experience. The fact that I had started another number of companies, that I had worked in both large corporate environments and had worked in small startup environments, had been on the other end of the checkbook where it was my money that was at risk and making payroll, these were the kind of things that made them think, this guy can talk our language. I have no idea what coaches do. I'm going to try it, and I have no way of evaluating whether he's a good coach or not, but it sounds like his business experience makes him somebody that I want to talk to. So my clients, I think, pick me still today because of my coaching experience. Now, while I was doing the executive forums and the coaching at the same time, you know, I had a little bit of an edge because in the executive forums, once a month I'd spend all day with the executive, with each one of the groups, three or four groups at a time. And I got to know them and know their problems. So in those cases, they may have picked me mostly because they got to know me and got comfortable with me. That's not usually the case when you're starting out in a coaching engagement. You don't know them and they don't know you. Today, since I don't do the executive forums, where do I get my clients? That's what people always want to know. You know, there is no silver bullet. There is no single source. I get clients that come to me through referrals of existing clients. I get referrals from past clients. I get referrals from friends. I get referrals from other coaches. I get referrals from consultants that I know. It's the gamut, and I've gone back over time and sort of tried to statistically analyze it, and there is no one stream that is dominant over the others. Who are my clients? Well, I decided I wanted to work with what I will call small to medium-sized businesses. The reason I picked them is I wanted businesses that were big enough that they could afford to pay me, that were big enough that they were having communications and organizational kinds of issues, but not so big that there was a whole lot of red tape in getting them to change directions or look at things a different way or submit every new idea that they developed out of the coaching to some committee. So they were sort of in that size range. Unintentionally, as I look at it over the last few years, my clients generally, my corporate clients, fall into one of two ends of the extreme scale. They are usually CEOs, and I'm going to say new CEOs, but I don't mean they've never been a CEO, but they are CEOs that have grown the company to the point where they're no longer able to spend all their time practicing the trade. They now have to move into the role of managing the business, and they're not comfortable with that. They know their business, whether it is making widgets or whether it is marketing space trips to the moon. They know how to do all that, but it is a new venture for them to spend all of their time working on managing an organization. So that group of CEOs seems to be attracted to me, and I like working with them. The other end of the scale, those are growing CEOs, is the way I label them. The other end of the scale is getting out CEOs. That's CEOs that are reaching the end of their career and have looked around and said, gee whiz, I never developed the management structure that's needed for me to escape here, either by selling the company and getting a premium value because it has a good existing team in place, or by going to a part-time basis and reaping the benefits sitting at home of a trained staff that's running a well-organized company. So the getting out CEOs need help in building their management structure and building their escape plan. Those are kind of the sizes, the types of clients that that I would do. And again, I like clients that are profitable, that are making enough money, that they're willing to spend money to put it back into ways to grow the business. Now, once I have a client, what does the contract look like? Let me back up for a second. One more thing about the clients. I didn't realize until recently that what I'm going to tell you is different from the way everybody else does it. I kind of thought most everybody did it this way, but in a conversation with my coach, she suddenly pointed out to me, Doug, do you realize I don't know anybody else that does it this way? And what she was talking about is that I'm not interested in taking on a client for a 3 to 4 month or even a 6 month engagement. I'm looking for clients that I'm going to have a long-term relationship with, that I'm going to be coaching their business and their staff over a long period of time, that they didn't go looking for a coach because one little thing was out of balance. And when I look at the clients I'm currently working with, I have two corporate clients that I have been working with for over 10 years, and I have two more that I have been going on 5 years now. And then we run the gamut of other ones. But basically, I like to work with a client where I can spend time, get involved, become a key integral part of their business from a coaching point of view, and feel a part of the growth and the advancement that they're going to make, which means we're going to go on a journey together. Most coaches, I've been told, their typical length of an engagement is 90 days, maybe 6 months on the outside. Boy, I hate the thought of that because I don't really like selling and I don't really like spending my time tracking down new clients. I like meeting new people and I love coaching. And if that generates clients, then I'm all for it. Once I've got a client, what does the contract look like? To start off, all my initial contract is a 90-day contract. Now, the client always asks me, what do you mean 90 days? I'm going, here's the contract. You're committed to 90 days, but the last clause in the contract says you can cancel it at any time during that 90 days with no penalty. And they always go, well, then why are you calling this a 90-day contract? And I explain to them, because I want you to at least make a mental commitment to me that you're going to give this relationship a try, a sincere effort for 90 days. There is no real effective coaching that is going to produce significant results that's going to occur in a very short period of time. So if you're willing to commit to 90 days, fine. If you find once we get started that I'm not the guy, this isn't the relationship, you can cancel it, and at least we made a good shot at doing it. Now, what services do I offer when I coach? You know, I was talking to this group in the meeting today, and a number of them do business coaching. A number of them have come from business backgrounds. And we got into the proverbial dialogue about coaching versus consulting. I tell my clients many times that what I really do is what I have labeled as coach-sulting. I like to coach. I'd rather do that than consult. But I know that my clients picked me initially because of my business experience. So if there is something that I have been through that I can share with them that will help them make a better decision, I will ask their permission and I'll offer that. In my mind, that's consulting, not coaching. But when I look at it, what I do with my clients is I coach, I consult, I do assessments, particularly the DISC report and Strength Finders. I conduct lunch and learn meetings for their staff where I do some training for the, in most cases, the full staff of the company. I do individual training of some staff members. I facilitate meetings and I facilitate their annual planning meeting. And when I say annual, it's really semi-annual, because I don't believe there's any point in doing an annual plan if you aren't going to also look at it at the mid-year point also. And in addition to that, if the company is the right size, I serve as a board of directors member. So those are all the services. Do I do all of those things for everybody? No. Do I do all of those things for anybody? Probably not. But I offer some combination of those things to different people. Again, this morning, part of the topic was there were a number of coaches that were early in their career and they wanted to know the value of a coaching credential. And since I had a master certified coaching credential, what is the value of that? And I said, I have to answer that in two ways. One, there is a personal value of having a coaching credential. The personal value is the confidence that you get from knowing that you are trained in your field. The confidence that you get from having picked up skills that you may not have had before, tools that you can use to help you do a better coaching job. Those are all internal benefits that help you as a coach, but they don't have anything to do with marketing. Now, how do you make your credential have value from a marketing point of view? You know, it would be wonderful if everybody I talked to knew what a coach was. It would be amazing if they knew what a master certified coach was. So what I have to do is I have to sell to the prospect or the new client what a coaching certificate means. And it goes something like this. I tell them, you know, I'm a master certified coach. The International Coach Federation is the national sort of licensing agency for coaches. They have 28,000 members. Of those, they have 18,000 that they have issued credentials to. Of those 18,000, there are 700 and some that hold the highest designation of master certified coach. Of those 700 and some, only 50% of them are here in North America. I am one of those. Now, does it have some meaning? Now it has some meaning. It sounds, oh, that must be important. What kind of coaching do I do? I do business coaching. Does that mean I never do life coaching? I don't think I've ever had a, because I deal in longer term relationships, I've ever had a client that at some point we didn't get into some issue that they needed coaching help on that had nothing to do with the business, that had to do with them personally, their family, their friendships, whatever. In doing that, there was a lot of stuff that I learned in coaching that I have found I'm not too comfortable using with my business clients. I'm going to label it as the woo-woo stuff. And if my coach trainers are listening, they're getting a big laugh out of this because I always talked about that. You know, it's the sort of stuff that we learn in coaching that you tell the client, now, I want to know what part of the body that you're feeling this in. And I want you to go stand in the corner and I want you to talk to the other self. You know, I try pulling that in a business environment, in a business office, and they're going to shoot me. They're just not ready for that in most cases. Do I use it? I use it in my head, but I don't use the language for them. Another bits and pieces of things I want to share, liability insurance. For many years, I did not carry liability insurance because I felt that I knew my clients well enough that I wasn't going to get sued by them. They were good people. But then as I started doing more and more corporate coaching, I realized that many times I was asked by the owners of the company, who I had a close relationship with now, to coach some individual in the company, maybe in a corrective action or maybe they were a fast track person. But these were people that didn't pick me as their coach. They were assigned me. Well, that is a different level of relationship, and I became a little nervous about it and decided I better start carrying liability insurance. So I go through the ICF site, and they have a partner agreement with one of the insurance companies, and for not a whole lot of money, I carry very good insurance. Early on, I was frequently called to do corrective action coaching. You know, we've got a problem employee. They can't seem to keep their office clean. They can't seem to get the reports in on time. But, you know, today that's really a rare situation. It's much more common for me to be asked to coach an employee because this person's got a lot of potential. Would you coach her? We think she could go a long way if we put her on the fast track, you know. And if I am asked to coach in a corrective situation, it is a long, penetrating conversation between myself and the manager and the HR department before I ever accept that assignment. I want to really get a good picture of what the problem is, who the person is, and if I don't think there's a good chance of being successful, then I don't want to touch that assignment. I tell them I don't want to do that. Okay, would any conversation about a business be complete if we didn't talk about social media? We have to talk about social media. It's sort of like checking off the box, okay? Yes, I have a website. It's 4 years old. It's currently, I just retained a new firm, a new individual, and he's updating it because 4 years is, you know, like ancient history on the internet. What's my most successful social media device? You're listening to it. It's the radio show. You know, when I started the radio show, the original intent was the radio show was a way to get in the door to talk to CEOs to be able to sell them on joining one of the executive peer groups. Once I sold that business, I still wanted to keep doing the radio show because I liked using it as a vehicle to meet people that I wouldn't otherwise get to meet. Also, the radio show gives me my unique label, my distinctive difference from other coaches. I am also a radio show host, besides a coach. It helps me with my networking. I have to go out and attend networking meetings and talk to people so that I can line up guests so that I have one every week. It helps me with my reputation in that people think more highly of me because of the quality of the guests that I have on the show. And the other thing it does is it provides me material for my clients to supplement my coaching. What I'm talking about there is, you know, let's assume that I've got a client that I'm coaching their chief financial officer, and they're talking about an issue. I might say, you know what? You need to listen to last week's radio program. You can listen to the podcast. It was with David Lund. He is the hotel financial coach. While you're not running a hotel business, much of what he has to say would relate to your business too. So go listen to that podcast, and then let's talk about it in our next coaching session. So I can reuse the material that's here. The other thing that I like is that, you know, I like learning new things, but I'm as lazy as the next person. So knowing that I'm going to do at least one or more shows a month without a guest, it forces me to think about what topic do I know enough about that I could talk about it on the radio show without embarrassing myself. And so it keeps me fresh. It keeps me researching new topics. Enough for the radio show. I also have Podbeam. That's related to the radio show because it's where we store the podcast as a result of the live show. I use Facebook mostly for personal, but I don't try to distinguish or keep my personal posting private from my business stuff. You know, if you're hiring a coach, it's a very personal relationship. You want to know what they're like. So if you're offended by looking at pictures of my Alaskan Malamute and my grandchildren, then don't hire me because I'm going to keep posting them. I use LinkedIn. Now that's straight business. I use Instagram. That's sort of a combination of both, but I love the visual effect. And I use a weekly newsletter. Again, another tag on. The newsletter supposedly is the purpose is to let you know what radio shows have been on in the last 2 weeks and what the radio show this week is going to be about. But what it really is, it's a touch piece. It's a refresher. It's a way of staying in contact with my 3,000 or so people on my contact list so they don't forget who I am. They get this thing on a regular basis. I was in this meeting this morning and somebody said, how many of you get Doug's newsletter? And a number of people raised their hand. I was blown away. Some of them I didn't even know. I don't even know where they ever got on the list. Okay, so now we're down to what is the typical engagement in a coaching environment? And again, the way I do it is a little different. Typically, the coaching involves once a week a one-hour phone call, once a month a one-hour one-on-one meeting in the client's office, a once a month where I go in and observe an operations meeting to see if the environment that my client's describing to me is really what is going on. Why do I do all this? You know, if you remember the old TV show Cheers, where Norm walked in the bar and everybody knew his name, that's my goal. If I can't walk in a company and have everybody know my name, I'm not doing my job. If the receptionist stops me and says, "Who are you here to see?" I blew it. I can walk in, the receptionist doesn't stop me, nobody asks what I'm doing wandering around on the second floor. I am a part of the company. There is no secret, even though I'm usually only coaching a fraction of the total people, there is no secret who I am and what I'm doing there. And this takes away some of the sting that gets created when coaching's looked on as something suspicious by the employees that aren't being coached. Now, when I set up my sessions, I explain to my clients that I have reserved a one-hour session for you. You do not have to use it. If when we start to talk, you have satisfied what you need today out of our coaching session in 15 minutes, then tell me and we'll hang up and you've got 45 minutes to go do something else that wasn't on your calendar. But I've reserved the hour for you. If you need more than an hour, we're going to have to schedule more time because that's going to lag into somebody else's call. Now, in fees, I no longer work on an hourly basis. All of my clients are on a monthly retainer. I don't want to do this business of, well, let's see, you missed 2 meetings out of the 4, so I'm only going to bill you for half the number, and we cut this one short, and this one went long. No, we talk about what's going to be involved, how many people I'm going to coach, how often I'm going to be in your office, how often I'm going to be on the phone, and I set a monthly retainer fee. The fee is set where I'm comfortable enough that I can also make the offer to all of the people that I'm coaching that if you need any help beyond our regular scheduled sessions, just call me and we'll set it up. Just drop me an email. I don't want them to have to be thinking about, is this worth spending an extra X number of dollars with Doug? I want them to call me. I want to be part of what they're debating about. Okay? I keep electronic notes of all sessions. I do not share the notes with the clients. They've asked for a copy of my notes, and I won't give it to them. I tell them, if you want notes from the session, you take the notes. These are my notes, and I read those notes. It is a rolling Word document that has every single meeting I've ever had with them. It gets pages and pages long. And that way, every time I get on the phone or go to meet with them, I can see, what did we talk about last time? What are the actions items? What did they commit to do? And let's get those out of the way right up front. I also encourage them to have an annual checkup session with me, so that once a year, we sit down and we look at the good, the bad, and the ugly of how our coaching went. What did you get out of it? What did you expect to get that you didn't get? What would we like to do different this next year? The other thing that I want to do that is my personal goal, I want to teach everyone I come into contact with how to coach. You know, we had a discussion again in this meeting I was at this morning about getting people to understand what the definition of coaching is. And I said, you know, you will know that your clients understand the definition of coaching when they start coaching other people. Coaching is a profession, but coaching can also be a style of management, and I think it's one of the most powerful management styles that exists today. I also want to make sure in my coaching sessions that I leave time to be social. You know what? These people are my friends besides my clients. We have a close relationship. They're going to tell me things they aren't telling anybody else. Let's make a little time to chat. How'd your weekend go? How'd the kids' baseball game go? We talk about those things. Now, I'm a business coach, not a life coach, but I have never had a coaching client that we didn't get into some life coaching topic sometime along the line. People don't live two separate lives that they just, you know, draw the boundary. Well, that's kind of the way I do my coaching. My new project that I'm very excited about right now is as a result of the client mix that I have, is I am absolutely fascinated with the issue of retirement or the issue of loss of identity when you have a major career change for one reason or another. We've done two radio shows on it so far. I'm going to do more. I'm really fascinated with this. I'm interviewing people constantly about it, and I'm hoping that this is going to be a book. And part of it is I want to not only cover the problem or the issue today of retirement or loss of identity, but I also think there are some unique questions and strategies that you as a coach could use to be more effective in coaching people through this issue. And I want to document those issues and share them with the world. That's it. That's what I do as a coach. That's what my coaching model looks like. It's not the same as everybody else's. It's not better than anybody else's. It's just what fits me. I appreciate you taking the time to listen to this. Again, I felt a little awkward in sort of throwing this all out there today, but based on the questions this morning, especially for people newer in the coaching field, they want to know how does somebody else do it? This is Doug Gefeller. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you're listening to it, well, thanks for visiting our website, The Coaching Perspective. Be sure to check out our archives for our other shows with some great guests. Speaking of guests, if you'd like to be in the show, we're always looking for interesting people to talk to. Just send me an email, doug@thecoachingperspective.com. I hope you've enjoyed the show today, that the discussion has provided you with some new ideas and information that you can put to use immediately to identify and achieve your goals. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, The Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach Doug Gefeller.